Fugitive. A QM production. Starring David Janssen as Dr. Richard Kimball, an innocent victim of blind justice, falsely convicted for the murder of his wife.
All right, and that gives us the basics, and we're ready to go talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken on Sherevision Radio, set for another 30 minutes of interesting and in-depth discussion of one of television's the greatest or maybe the greatest dramatic series. All right, tonight we're going to be talking Saving Dr. Kimball. He gets saved by a lot of people, but why? Why did they do it? We're going to find out. To start things off will be the fugitive expert himself, Bobby Neer. So Bobby, you go ahead.
Thank you, Dave. Either Richard Kimball is the luckiest man on earth, or he has powers of persuasion that anyone would envy. Time after time after time, Kimball finds himself in such dire situations that he must depend on the kindness of strangers or he is finished. And it begins where else? At the beginning, in the pilot episode, as Kimball tells his story for the very first time to Monica Wells. As tears begin welling up in his eyes and hearts across America begin breaking in half, it's the first but hardly the last time that Richard Kimball's doe-eyed good looks and soft, dripping with sincerity voice will serve him well and save his life. For the purposes of this program, we will focus on some of the best-known episodes from the first couple of seasons. We have, of course, discussed these at length on previous shows, but I'm after something different here, motivation. Why these people so willingly accept the convicted felon's word that he didn't do it? Why they put their own lives and the lives of their loved ones squarely on the line for a man they don't even know? By the way, for anyone curious enough to wonder why this program is part two, when we didn't discuss this last week, it dates back to the first season of the show, when we discussed two episodes in which people saved Kimball and why. At that time, we were limited to what we had already done. Now, having almost finished, we can expand on that topic. That's why this is part two. An initial look at this series might lead you to believe that Richard Kimball simply has the good luck to run into people who are willing to stop, listen to his story, and then, even at great peril to themselves, help him if they can. But a deeper look behind the scenes shows something else. More than a few of these people have their own private agendas, their own personal reasons for wanting to get Kimball out of their lives. It isn't always as charitable as it may look. Some do it out of guilt, some do it for love, some do it for money, some do it for fame. Season 1 features several of the most notable of the characters that fit this profile. People like Wilma Springer in Nightmare at North Oak and reporter Mike Decker in Search in the Windy City. They couldn't be less alike. Wilma has her son's life saved by Kimball, and Decker is after the Pulitzer Prize. One feels an obligation to pay him back, and the other sees a big payoff in his future. By the way, it is notable that in North Oak we see Kimball do something that we never see him do, and that is, after proclaiming his innocence, practically demanding a payback for something good he has done. When, after saving all of those children from a flaming bus crash, he says to a horrified and deeply conflicted Wilma, "A life for a life? Is that too much to ask?" At first she turns him into her sheriff husband. Later she will give him the key to his freedom. Kitty, this is a TV show where fictional characters living in a fantasy world go wherever writers want them to go. But we all live in real life, where taking the word of a total stranger may carry dire consequences for you if you're not careful. How willing would you be to help Kimball escape the law if you had no one's word but his, to say nothing of, in some instances, Gerard whispering in your other ear that he's guilty as hell?
Well, I think it all depends on the situation. And I think that in some of these episodes where the writing has been very strong, like, for example, Nightmare at North Oak, Wilma Springer ultimately gives him the key to leave because she actually kind of gets it from two perspectives. She gets Kimball's perspective, but then Gerard comes in and paints Kimball as this cold-blooded killer who killed his wife. And yet this supposed cold-blooded killer who supposedly offed his wife ends up saving a busload of total strangers' children. And obviously that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, if somebody really had that little lack of respect for human life, if they thought so less of it that they would kill their wife, why would they risk their necks for total strangers? And so I think that's where, in that instance, that comes into play. In the case of Mike Decker, Mike Decker, I think, went from the standpoint that, on the one hand, that, yes, he wanted the Pulitzer Prize, but on the other hand, I think Mike Decker actually believed that Kimball was probably innocent because Mike Decker was someone who followed the trial. And he even says to Kimball, you know, two jurors held out, you know, for something like two or three extra days before they finally were persuaded to find him guilty. And so for Mike Decker, he does have reasonable doubt there. And in the end, he decides that because he has reasonable doubt, he's not going to sell him out for a prize-winning story.
What would you have done if it was you? If you were Wilma Springer, what would you have done?
If I was Wilma Springer, I don't know that I would have turned him in. I think I might have looked the other way and told him to make a hasty exit out of the house.
But having made the mistake of turning him in, would you have given him the key to the cell later on?
I might have if I had access to it.
Okay.
So, but I mean, I like I said, I don't think I would have been so quick to turn him in because of his saving the kids' lives. I always found it interesting in that episode where she asked him if it was a fair trial, and he said yes, when everything that we've seen of the trial indicates that it was anything but a fair trial.
But, you know, it's different for her than it is for Mike Decker, because Mike Decker's been following the case as a reporter, so he knows all the ins and outs, but until that bus crash, Wilma Springer never even heard of Richard Kimball. So more than anybody else,
yeah,
she's just taking his word. She's got no proof one way or the other.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's not possible for a guilty person to really do a good deed at some point. It could happen.
Well, but I think she's willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, and she certainly is not the only person who's given him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, like in the episode See Hollywood and Die, where he was taken hostage with Joanne because he saved her neck, she told him to just go, and she told the police that he went the opposite direction. You're not really completely sure that she believed that he was innocent.
But you know what? Compared to the two lunatics she was with,
yeah,
criminals, he looks good, even if he had done it.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, I think she just kind of went with the idea that she owed him one. I mean, I'm not 100% certain that she believed it. I think she wanted to believe that he didn't do it because he wasn't a total psycho like the two guys that were, you know, like I said, that did kidnap the two of them.
Okay, Kitty, let's let Ken get in here before he falls asleep. Ken?
Oh, I'm enjoying listening to both of your commentary. Wilmer Springer in Nightmare at North Oak, I think out of all the episodes we've seen and reviewed, I think that was the most heroic act. You know, we're talking about people helping Kimball along his journey, saving him from certain situations. But I think Wilma Springer, out of all of them, is the one that really riffed the most by giving him the key in that cell. She was really conflicted, really. She did not know if he was innocent or guilty. She did ask him a couple questions. She only knew him for such a short time. She talked to him in the bedroom and then in the hallway. And that's not really much to get to know Richard Kimball, but I think she just went according to her conscience, and, you know, plus the fact that her child was safe in the bus crash, and also the community, you know, kind of sticking up for Kimball. I think she put all that together. She was going back and forth, and then that was very heroic what she did, you know, passing the key.
Let me see if I get this straight now. So you're both telling me that though it was against the law to give him the key and let him out of jail, it's okay to break the law if there are extenuating circumstances. Is that right?
I would.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that it's okay to break the law. I mean, if I opted to look the other way, I don't know that I would have necessarily felt very good about myself. But by the same token, if I had some reasonable doubt, I would certainly look the other way.
Certainly, Mike Decker would not have done anything right if it wasn't for his wife laying all that guilt on him. He was absolutely going to follow through, but she worked on him enough to bring him around.
Yeah. I think that was a matter of conscience also, because he was going back and forth.
Right.
And then just went with his gut feeling at the end. Again, it was a matter of, just maybe it's Kimball's charm. You think he has a charm aspect?
Well, that's why I mentioned in my intro about the pilot episode. I mean, they set it up at the beginning. We see him do it right away. You watch that pilot episode, and you see the camera, in that scene there where he's with Monica Wells. And the camera pans right in on his face deliberately. That's not accidental. And you can, because, David Jansen was so great at facial expressions, you can actually see tears starting to come into his eyes. And he tells him in a very soft voice that he didn't do it. She has absolutely no reason whatsoever to believe him. In fact, absolutely nobody has any reason to believe him. Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I wouldn't take it. I don't know that I would take his word.
Her from her psychopathic husband.
Yeah, but see, that's the whole point. You can't just say that because, people have to pay their price to society. We don't take criminals and let them out of jail or let them off because they did something good. I mean, would you really want Charles Manson to be running around today because once upon a time he saved somebody's life when he took all those other ones? I think that, it's a hard law and order stance I'm taking. I understand that. But, we can't necessarily just say, we know he really is a nice guy. We don't let people off just because they committed one crime. They may get a lesser sentence if they don't have a violent background. But in reality, in a courtroom, you don't get anything for what you do.
Okay, Bob. Well, then, so you're saying then if Kimball helped you out by saving a member of your family, you'd still turn him over to Gerard?
I would say this. I would not go out of my way to turn him into Gerard. But
precisely, that's what I said. I mean, I would probably just look the other way. I wouldn't take that step that Wilma Springer did, where she told her husband, he is Richard Kimball, we have to turn him in.
Okay, but we're in a different position because we know that he's a good person. Well, we've been watching the show all this time, and not in the pilot episode, but later on, and we've seen him save countless lives. And so we're absolutely convinced. We have nothing to worry about. You can let him out on the street. I don't care because I know this guy didn't do anything. Come on, be realistic. But my point is, if you don't really know him, and some of these people just did not know him at the beginning, and in the series, it's really interesting because when you watch it from week to week to week to week, you think to yourself, golly, he has the good fortune of meeting all these people who really will help him, and it's not that easy in real life to find friends and people who will really help you when you're down. You have to get pretty lucky to do that.
I don't think that you'd have to go out of your way to turn him into Gerard, because I get the impression that all you'd have to do is, like, look out the window and there'd be Gerard standing there just waiting for you to, give him a high sign.
Well, that's what I'm saying, so there could be the benign neglect. You don't help him, you don't really do anything, you just say, listen, I'm caught in the middle here, and I don't know whether he did it or he didn't do it, but I'm not gonna get stuck here like this.
All right, listen, we're going to take a time out, because when we get into benign neglect, we use single-syllable words on talking television. We're going to take a time out real quick. We'll come back and talk more of why people were saving Dr. Kimball, part two, when we return to Talk Fugitive on Retro Radio.
If you love to smoke, then you know there's no place left in America where you can light up a butt these days. That's why Carnival is proud to offer our new Smoker's Cruise. You'll board our luxury liner and be off to, who cares where you go? The point is, you'll be in international waters where you can smoke 24 hours a day for a full 2 weeks.
They let us smoke on the dance floor, at all our meals, even in the pool.
I like all the activities. Smoke alongs, cigar races. Hey, I'm in a babe who smokes unfiltered Lucky's.
The Smoker's Crew. Sign up now. now for regular or menthol. Hey, it's not just a vacation. It's the lung boom.
It's my friend.
All right, talking fugitive here on Sheriff Vision Radio. If you'd like to talk with us, you know you can, 800-407-KSAV, and you can have your turn here in the spotlight, so to speak, on Sheriff Vision Radio. Okay, let's go back to find out more tonight, saving Dr. Kimball, and we will go again to Bobby Neer.
Thank you, Dave. Continuing our long-running Three Faces of series, it is now time to focus on the person or persons responsible for all of the angst associated with this program, and that's the infamous one-armed man. And unlike the other main characters, going by different names, the rather generic-sounding Fred Johnson, the more mainstream business-like name of Frederick Sykes, or the most exotic of them all, Ben Charnquist, all played by three different actors, Bill Raisch in the original series, Andreas Katsoulis, if I'm pronouncing that properly, in the film version, and Stephen Lang in the 2000-2001 version of the series. Let's face it, a killer by any other name is still a killer. He's the man without the golden arm, and we'll take a look at all three versions of him in order to determine just who is most despicable. The Three Faces of the One-Armed Man, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. And here's a little reminder we haven't mentioned lately. The Fugitive Views and Reviews, the long-running Yahoo discussion group that is still in business, is also in book form, three of them, no less, as always available online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Thanks to the many people who have purchased them, and a heads up to look for the fourth and final edition, probably late this year or early next year. Ken, who is most responsible for these books seeing the light of day, assures me that the fourth edition will be bigger and better than ever, with extensive reviews of the series finale, final head-to-head poll results, and there is even some whispering going on behind the scenes that no less an authority than Kitty just might even write an After the Fugitive story detailing exactly what the TV series did not. What happened to the main characters after Richard Kimball walked down that street in Stafford, Indiana, with the wrong woman on his arm? Did he have to kill her, too? Volume 4, The World Waits with Breathless Anticipation, coming later this year. Okay, let's take a look at some of the other people in the series who had additional, perhaps self-serving reasons to save Kimball's life other than the obvious. Well, talk about self-serving. How about famed criminal attorney G. Stanley Laser from Man in a Chariot, who boldly proclaims on a TV show that he could have gotten Kimball acquitted? This all leads to a mock trial and puts Kimball directly in danger of being caught while he watches on closed-circuit TV. The problem is that he quickly turns away from Kimball and onto Laser, as he uses the occasion to prove to his law students that he's still worthy of their admiration, that he can still cut it as a lawyer. And in the end game, those two old codgers, Devlin and Reed, who one day find Richard Kimball seeking refuge in their home from a citywide dragnet. If ever there were two characters who fiddled while Kimball burned, it's these two. All Kimball wants to do is lay low until the heat diminishes, and all they want to do is one-up each other to prove who is right and who is wrong. That it is likely a man will perish as a result of this never occurs to them, and for all of their efforts, they will be carted off to prison. Ken, if ever there were people in this series who have less than charitable reasons to involve themselves with Richard Kimball, it's the new odd couple and the old man lawyer and his last grasp of glory. What do you think?
Man in a Chariot, that started off season 2. And Ed Begley?
That's right.
Yeah, he gave a very good performance. Not too much heroic for me. He did, put up a big show in the courtroom and the trial, you know, with his students and all. I gave that episode a 5 rating. You guys liked it more than me. Not too impressed with his situation. The end game, I did give a 10 rating, and that was the end of season 1. You know, you had the cat and mouse between Gerard and Kimball, right. And you do have Reed saving Kimball, you know, hiding him in the trunk, and then also tricking Gerard by going the other way and running the car off the cliff.
I know, Ken, but at the end of the story, you remember what he did? Gerard is standing at the top of the hill,
yeah,
looking down at the flaming car wreck, and he says, "So this is the end game." And he walks out there and he starts laughing, and he gives it up. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, very odd. If
well, I mean, is he going to save the man's life or not?
That was a very strange, those two characters, you know, living together, and then, you know, one is conflicted whether to turn Gerard in or not. The other guy, Devlin, you know, keeps his mouth shut while
Gerard... Well, one thought he was guilty and one thought he might not be.
Yeah. But, you know, again, it was conscience, you know, should I turn him in or not? You know, one minute you want to do it, next minute you don't want to do it. Those two guys, they're not much heroes to me, even though Reed did help Kimball out, you know. But they both went to prison, and you know what? They should, for being such idiots.
Now, wait a minute. I don't think Devlin went to jail.
They both got carted off at the end.
They were, well, because he was with the police when the police were chasing Devlin.
It was my impression that they were both taken to jail.
Yeah, because, well, what did he do? He didn't
harbored a fugitive.
He didn't help him escape. He turned him in.
But they harbored a fugitive in their home.
Because yeah. I remember at the end, Devlin said, well, how long will he be gone? And someone said, oh, he'll probably be gone at least 6 months. And Devlin looked really... worried, like he was going to be lonely for
okay.
6 months.
Well, I may be wrong about that. I thought they both went to prison.
No,
I got the impression they both were going to be hauled in.
No, because...
You're the only one who's hauled that one.
No, because Devlin was the one who turned him in.
Okay. Well, I'll have to go back and watch that and see exactly what it looks like at the end. But
okay.
I want to ask Ken a question about Man in the Chariot. Ken, you remember the end of that episode? Yeah, I believe it's after Kimball hides in the law library. Remember, at the top of the ladder?
Yeah.
And he goes back to see the lawyer, and Laser says to him, I'm sorry, Dr. Kimball, but, you know, I can't do anything more for you. We proved in the courtroom that you probably didn't do it. But, you know, now that he's gotten what he wanted out of it, he's gotten his own personal glory. He has the gall to stand there and say, well, sorry about that. You're just going to have to go back out on the run and find that guy, that one-armed man. I mean, it just seems to me that all along, he wanted to prove something about himself,
actually,
not about Richard Kimball. That's
actually,
not being
Bob, I thought the way it ended up was that when they found the defendant not guilty, he said at the end, he said, they found me not guilty, not you. You know, I thought that was the crux of it, was that he was making this impassioned speech at the end. But in the end, they were just finding him not guilty because they were being nice to him. You know, because really, he really had not proven anything in that mock trial to warrant a not guilty verdict.
All right. Well, let me move on here while we still have time to I think two of the really most important characters in the series. Last but not least, women play a huge part in Kimball's life. And two of the very best are Amy from The End Is But the Beginning and Margaret Ruskin from Escape into Black. Amy, of course, is physically attracted to Kimball, but after doing a reality check and realizing those feelings are not necessarily returned, she literally saves his life by facing down Gerard in her own home while Kimball hides in the next room. But my own personal choice for the one person in this series who saves Richard Kimball with absolutely not a single personal thing to gain would be Margaret Ruskin from Escape into Black.
Yeah.
There is no guilt involved here. There is no thing to be gained. There is nothing but trouble as she puts her life on the line by seeking out, finding, and actually confronting the one-armed man, all so she could say to Kimball near the end of this episode, I saw him too. Ken, I know that's one of your favorite lines from the series, is it not?
Yes, we need to have a top 10 list of favorite quotes throughout the series. So let's get a poll on that on our group.
Okay.
And see which one comes out number one.
Okay.
But Margaret Ruskin, yes, you know, we all love that episode. That's a 10 classic rating episode. But she went out of her way to save Kimball. You know, she finds out from the doctor that Kimball's going to turn himself in, and she storms out the door, goes to the train station, seeking on the train, going back and forth, up and down, and then, you know, they have that really dramatic moment as they're sitting, and he recalls his memory. And then at the last minute, Gerard's in the other stall there waiting to come in. She gets in the way, and you're right. I guess I would list her number two behind Wilma as far as heroes in this series. I mean, that literally saved Kimball. Otherwise, he's hauled off by Gerard, you know, to Stafford. He's gone.
Well, I would have to put her personally ahead of Wilmer Springer because she really, see, Wilmer Springer had a reason to let him go. He saved all his children, saved her son. But Margaret Ruskin is just doing her job. That's her job in the hospital, to be kind of like a social worker. So she doesn't have to take that extra step. She could have simply said, look, I'm trying to help you regain your memory. But for her to actually go and confront the one-armed man, she put her life on the line to go in and do that. So that was really quite remarkable. I've looked through this entire series. I can't find anybody else who really literally doesn't have any personal agenda. I just can't find anything there. I mean, the fact that she's not in love with, it's not a love story the way it is with Amy, you know. And so she does it for absolutely no reason at all. I like her. I like Amy. I like Romans. I like them all. But if I have to pick one person who does it without anything behind it, she would be the one that I would pick. What do you think, Kitty, between Amy and Wilma? I mean Margaret.
Oh, I would definitely rank Margaret up there because you're right. She doesn't have any kind of personal agenda, and unlike the other scenarios where they think he is not guilty because he's just a darn nice guy, she actually found the one-armed man. And so
right.
She, you know, she actually has reason to believe, a real concrete reason to believe that he didn't do it.
Right. And that's, it's just...
And so it makes perfect sense for her to stick her neck out.
That's right. Now, in the case of the end is but the beginning with Amy, first she was, of course, physically attracted to Kimball, and then when she saw that it could really go nowhere, she could have just written him off. She could have gotten angry and said, you know what, I don't care what happens to this guy. Instead, she helps him, admits that it's not going to go where she thought it would go, but she still helps him anyway. So you have to really like her, too.
But you know, Bob, she's
yeah.
the only one, even men and women, that took a bullet for Kimball. She got
yep.
right in the
That's
way
right.
of
That's
that
right.
gunfire and
That's
took
right.
a bullet.
You sure did. Exactly.
That's pretty heroic.
That's a good point. I forgot that. While we have a minute or two here, a couple of other people in the series that deserve honorable mention, at least, Captain Eckard from Trial by Fire, who decides when he finds out about
Kimball. One minute.
Okay, when he finds out about Kimball, that will go on trial, even though he's got his own temporary drug addiction to hide. And let's not leave out Victor Leonetti from May God Have Mercy, who actually confesses to killing Ellen Kimball. And does anybody remember Davey Lambert from Fatso in season one?
Absolutely. In fact, when you first started talking about these types of people, that was someone that came to mind right away.
That's
and
right.
how it wasn't just Davey in the end that covered for Kimball. Davey's whole family covered for him in the end.
That's right, they did.
You know, they told the bad son to shut up and not say anything.
This series is full of people like that. We couldn't possibly hope to cover them all in 30 minutes, that's for sure. But I think these are really the main ones, and these are the ones that are most unforgettable. So if you're looking at the series, you know, you can just say, oh, he's lucky, you know, he finds people who want to help him. But a lot of these people have their own axes to grind in certain ways. Doesn't matter. In the end, he escapes. That's all that's really important.
All right, and we're going to escape right now. So I thanks to you three for another interesting program. I encourage the audience to stick around in 1 hour talking television with Dave White, and we're going to be discussing the career of Lucille Ball, and in particular, I Love Lucy tonight. So that's in 1 hour on Sharavision Radio.